We're up to the last week of Keeneland. It's been a great meet out there in Lexington. Had the pleasure of going personally early in the week. Hopefully you were able to get there as well. But if nothing else, you can be betting on this fine product, the All Turf Pick 3. There's been some real overlays in that bet. Should get at least one or two more of them in, hopefully, this week before it's all said and done. We're going to have shows for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. If you're in the area, check out the sale. Go in person. There is the Horses of Racing Age sale on Friday. Keeneland.com, great place to go to get all the information you need, whether it's on the racing side or the sales side. What a great pleasure it's been to do this work with our friends over at Keeneland. And we'll highlight one more time the great opportunity for players with the Daily Doubles. The takeout dropped from 22% to 15% for this meet. It's been a great decision business-wise. It's been great for the players. Get in, play those doubles, get involved with Keeneland for the last week of the season before we fully give ourselves over to Derby Madness. For much more information, go to Keeneland.com. Hello and welcome to a special edition of the In the Money Players podcast. We've got basically a hodgepodge of a Derby show, if I'm being honest. We've got some really cool content that has been YouTube original, but doesn't need to be exclusive. I have gotten some feedback of people who'd prefer to listen to some of the YouTube content, and I'm not going to do it with everyone because some of them just won't work that are really punchy and short. But these are some more in-depth discussions that will work. We're going to put those later in the show. We're going to start off with two pieces of original content. One, to sit down with Frank McGoey to talk about his latest thoughts on the Derby with an emphasis on some of the horses he's seen in person and have been watching the workouts for. And then also Blake Seidel from Christine Moore and Hats and the Blake Collection will be here as well to give some hat buying advice, because it's not too late. If you're going to the Derby, if you're going to a Derby party, you want to look your best. Cam Hats can help. Believe me, you know, not just the reading an ad. I'm also a client. So we'll get that out there for you in the world, followed by some of the highlights from the YouTube channel. Alex Henry talking pedigrees. Nick on the projected morning line. We'll probably start with Nick, then go to Alex, and we'll wrap with a deeper discussion of some of the Japanese contenders. So keep it locked. Enjoy this unusual edition of the show. Do check out the YouTube channel, because there's a lot of stuff on there that you aren't going to find anywhere else. So the only way to make sure you get all of it is to subscribe and click the notification bell. But hope you enjoy this little bit of a departure on the In the Money Players podcast. And we'll be back with Keeneland coverage for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And the show will start right after this. People ask me this time of year, how do you do it? How do you create so much content? Well, it starts with what's in your coffee cup in the morning. And for me, that's been Free Reign coffee. I've really enjoyed both the grounds and the beans. I'll admit, I haven't had the pods yet, but no less of an authority than my mom has told me the coffee's absolutely delicious in pod form too. Whatever you're looking for, you can get it at freereigncoffee.com. And they've got cool merch too. You've probably seen me wearing it on some of the YouTube videos. Right now, we've got a site discount, 20%, no matter what you're getting on that website, money20, the code to use over at freereigncoffee.com. See what all the fuss is about. And to answer your question, Free Reign Coffee, that's how I get up and get after it. This is an original piece of content. We thought about having Frank McGoey as part of our Monster Pod series. We were going to make him talk about Track Phantom on there. But what we're going to do instead is catch up with the very same Frank McGoey about his general thoughts about this year's Derby, with an emphasis on all the runners, including Track Phantom, that he got to see this winter. Frank, how are things?
It's going good, Pete. A little crazy time of the year down here. You know, we got Derby 2 weeks out. We got Jazz Fest starting this week. I'm involved in both, and I'm doing a bit of a juggling act. How you like that?
I love it. Will you get to the Derby? I know often you make that one of your annual excursions.
This year we are not making the trip. We got a whole big party being thrown at one of the guys, the guy that we usually fly up with on his plane. We're going to do a party at his house. So I'm sure it'll be good, and it'll be the same characters involved. Looking forward to that. And the weather's great down here, so it should be good. You know, you originally asked me about Track Phantom, looking at him and his chances going into the Derby, and I'm way more excited about the weather for Jazz Fest this weekend than Track Phantom's chances in the Derby, to be honest with you.
Well, let's start with Track Phantom. I may pull you back in at the end if you have any recent stories from your unsavory crew that you're going to be spending the Derby with. But Track Phantom, a horse that I feel like when you're, whether you're looking at bloodlines or you're watching his races, a talented runner. But, I mean, am I wrong in saying he clearly doesn't want to go this far?
You're not wrong. You're 100% right. I mean, he never gave that impression to me physically, watching him train. And he was good when, you know, maybe before some of the other three-year-olds got good. But if you go back in hindsight and take a look at the horses he beat in the Gun Runner and the LeCompte, nobody in those fields has moved forward and is in this year's Derby. And he pretty much had things his own way in both of those races. And then he had it his own way completely in the Risen Star when he faced a couple of horses that did make this year's Derby field, Sierra Leone and Catching Freedom. And Sierra Leone ran past late, and Catching Freedom, Saez rode him that day, and he didn't really look like he got along with Saez. He was on his wrong lead and everything, but he was very close to him that day. And I think both those horses are horses that are going in the right direction, whereas Track Phantom is probably plateaued. But I totally understand after his fourth place finish in the Louisiana Derby, why the connections would want to go on. You know, I mean, I think this is a seasoned group of owners that kind of know the game. They've got the points. They've got the opportunity. You know, you're looking forward to taking your shot. It would probably be an easier decision had he run eighth. But when you run fourth, I guess you got to go forward. You know what I mean?
It's hard to play. I mean, yeah. People talk about the experience. I mean, being able to do the walkover and be there right. With those great seats. I mean, I'm not saying I would be doing anything different. And I guess the hope is you take your shot, you see how it goes. We've seen another thing that probably contributes to it is some of the crazy long shots we've seen over the last 10 years. Granted, generally of the closer variety as opposed to the speed horse variety. But yeah, you can't blame him for taking a shot. And it's just going to be, you know, hopefully, even if it doesn't go well in the Derby, then he's just a horse you cut back. I mean, though it is interesting that you note the maturity edge that he might have had. I mean, do you think he'll be competitive going forward just at shorter distances? Or do you think he's the sort of the prototypical horse that matured early and now just everybody's caught up?
No, I think he can be more competitive at shorter distances. I think a cutback will definitely help him, you know, going further in his career. And he just doesn't seem physically like the type of horse that wants to go. I mean, a mile and a quarter is a different beast. It's a totally different beast. I got a chance to see, you know, a lot of him up close and personal, and he's just not really built like a horse that looks like he wants to go a mile and a quarter.
Let's pivot to some of the others. You talked about some of the ones who are coming into form. You've talked about how important it is to get a horse that wants to go a mile and a quarter. Is there a horse in this group that might click both of those boxes for you?
I'm not tied on to anybody yet. Last time I planted my flag on one really far out, I regretted it. I gave out Epicenter as a CFL, which
can't flip, you know, and lose.
Yeah, close. You're real close. Right. And then situationally, you know, he probably ran the best race but got beat that day.
For sure.
So I don't know. I haven't totally decided yet, but I think there's a couple of things I'm pretty sure of. If Fierceness wins, which I think is a big if, certainly won't be anywhere near in the fashion he did it in the Florida Derby, and I've got questions about him. And I think a horse like Sierra Leone looks like he is just blossoming at the right time. His last work this past weekend that I got to see at Keeneland, looked phenomenal. And he looked extremely serious running the last eighth of a mile at Keeneland in the bluegrass. I think he's going to move forward. I think he's going to be very tough. I know the numbers, some of the numbers on Thoroughgraph, are a little bit of a mixed bag you know, Fierceness has two races that really stand out, but you're not getting that same scenario in the Derby. You got to wait and see how it draws, wait and see how the speed stacks up. But you know, I just got a little bit of a lean towards a horse like Sierra Leone right now. But we got a long way to go, Pete. You know, we'll see how they're training. One of the good things about this year's Derby with the new rule at Churchill is that I believe all Oaks and Derby contenders have to be there a week out on the grounds.
Yep.
So we should be able to see all their last moves, and you get to really see how a horse is doing, and hopefully we'll be able to tell. They'll tip the hand as to who's going to show up. And, well, actually, it's not just show up. You got to move forward. The horse that wins this race, both the Oaks and the Derby, is always a horse that's peaking at the right time. No doubt about it. Seems like it's every year.
And there'll be coverage daily. I mean, it's already started, the daily coverage from the team at Churchill Downs. We're going to have some stuff over on the YouTube side of things, almost like a little recap show of what folks are seeing in the mornings. Certainly curious if you have any thoughts on what you see to chime in between now and then as well. With you were always good at this game, and then the experience you've developed clocking at Fairgrounds the past few seasons, that'd be invaluable info, and we'll make sure to check back with you. A few follow-ups for you, though, starting with Sierra Leone. How concerned with you on a scale of from not at all to very are you with the way he approached the gate in the Bluegrass? That's giving me a little bit of pause, whereas everything else looks like it's headed in the right direction. The way he approached the gate and him not wanting to go in there that day makes me nervous, I'll be honest.
Not me. I think he'll love it because he didn't do it in his other races. And I actually think the fact that he overcomes that and wins, I still think he was a work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he lost the Gotham to Dornock? Was that the guy or the Remsen? Which one was
Remsen.
It? The Remsen. Well, Dornock didn't win that race. He just lost it because he was green. You know, I mean, he just all over the place, got up to that horse and didn't know it was his job to go on about it. He looks like when you point him in the right direction and who's in front of him now, he knows what he's doing. He knows, you know, he's supposed to go past him. I think he'll learn, you know, that gate experience, I think, is a one-off, in my opinion. I think they'll work with him. I'm sure Chad's going to school him at the gate a couple of times, and he'll be fine. He looks like a smart horse. I got to see him up close and personal when he was in town for the Risen Star. You know, he handled everything in the paddock really good that day. It was a busy day, and he'll be fine. He's in good hands, and I think he's going to run a race of his life in the Derby. I'm confident he will show up in the Derby with his best race. And I'm not concerned that much with traffic because he won't be as far back as everybody thinks he's going to be. I'm not saying he's my horse yet, but he's definitely one of the ones that's doing very well.
This isn't the first time I've heard that idea put forth that he's a smart horse and a curious horse. And the idea that, you know, he got over the gate thing, went in, and then had presumably such a positive experience. Well, maybe he can build off it.
Right. I mean, if it was one of those races where you could bet during the race, imagine what his odds would have been, you know, with a half mile to go.
Yeah.
and then it really wasn't close. I mean, he just inhaled those horses late. It was impressive. It was definitely impressive. And his workout at Keeneland was impressive.
I still got
a lot of work to do. I still got a lot of work to do because I'm pretty much in a bubble during, you know, the prep season, being at the Fairgrounds all tied down with those guys. But I'll do some work these next 2 weeks, and we'll see how they're coming up and make a decision.
I've cited you several times throughout this Triple Crown season because of a note you gave us on Honor Marie before his return to the races, when you described him as a horse that was definitely going to be short of firing his best shot. He ran pretty well there, all things considered. Improved markedly in the second start at a huge price, as he won now, might be sitting on a race in the third start of the layoff. I'm pretty intrigued.
Yeah, I would think that he's definitely moving in the right direction. I'm a little concerned that there are a couple others that are maybe moving in the right direction too, and he wasn't up to speed then, and they may move a little bit further away. But I think you will see the best race of his three-year-old season in the Derby for sure. And he couldn't have had – I mean, leading up to his first start at the Fairgrounds, when I say everything went wrong, everything went wrong for him. He never even got to complete his final work before the LeCompte or the Risen Star because that's the work that Deshaun Parker fell off of.
Right.
Midway through the work. So, I mean, things couldn't have gone any worse for him. And he definitely moved forward, and he looks like he's training forward. I'm just not sure he's good enough. I think he's good, but I don't know if he's amongst the top of his generation.
At 33-1 internationally right now, if we see anything like that, I'm definitely going to be mixing in. I mean, it's just a question of a few different things. He does seem like he's improving. He can finish. And we have, because of you, this sort of info about the trajectory he's on. And it just makes sense that he'd be ready to fire his best shot, even if not to win. Definitely a horse for underneath for me.
A little more insight on another local horse would be Catching Freedom, who
that was next on my list to ask you about. What do you make of him? He obviously has Honor Maria in the form book and has looked terrific.
Yeah, he was chronically a poor worker here until late in the season. He was, I mean, every time he worked with Timberlake, Timberlake would just destroy him. But he started working better before the Louisiana Derby, and almost like the light kind of went off for him. And I think it's noticeable to watch the way he was handled by Pratt as opposed to the way he was handled by Saez in the Risen Star. He was a much more relaxed horse for Pratt, and he switched leads when asked and finished. And he looks like he's really training forwardly to me from what I've seen in his works at Churchill. He's another one that's going to have to step it up to get to who I think, you know, some of the top ones in the generation are. But I think he'll take a step forward in the Derby for sure. He looks like the light kind of came on and he's getting better.
Any other things that you've seen?
The other one I got to see on a regular basis was Just a Touch until he left here and went on his incredibly daunting task that Brad put him on. I can't imagine he would do that with anybody he didn't have extremely high thoughts of, but I mean, taking him to New York in his second start for that one turn mile, which is such a demanding distance. And I thought he ran really good.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to deterministic coming back in his next effort, but he certainly, I was looking at his numbers. I mean, he's just run solid numbers every time, you know, all three of his races. And he's probably got another step forward in him too, you would think. I saw his last work at Churchill. It looked okay. Didn't wow me, but it looked, you know, he's doing what he's being asked to do. He's got the frame of a classic horse. He's got big, long stride, big, long neck. This may be a lot in his fourth start, but he's got potential. He's one of the contenders, I would think.
That's good to hear. Well, we're going to bother you as we get closer and your thoughts continue to develop. Going to let you get out of here now. But if you did have, and I didn't prep you at all for this, but you're usually pretty good at this on the fly. You've talked about your merry band of misfits down there who you like to hang with at the track, folks you go to the Derby with, etc. Is there a Derby story or a recent story from you and the crew that you want to share with us before we send you home today?
You know what? I'll send you off with a tie-in, Derby and Jazz Fest. The Jazz Fest helped me get my sanity back after the 2017 Derby. It was 2017? Was that the year? Always Dreaming? Is that right?
That sounds right.
So we had the whole group of us up there. We were in the Gold Room, and we were a few of us were playing in the KDBC when Churchill had the Kentucky Derby Betting Challenge. But we're also, you know, playing group pick sixes and pick fives and stuff like that. And we put together a ticket in the $2 pick six that day, starting with the Pat Day Mile. And we got, and the weather was horrible that day. And all the Louisiana jocks were riding really good that weekend. I know Giroux had won a couple of big races. Mina was riding in good form. Corey was riding in good form. So the weather was bad. And I was like, you know, these guys that know how to ride this track are going to keep riding. Well, so we put together a ticket that started with Wild Shot winning the Pat Day Mile for, I think it was Rusty Arnold. He was a decent price. And then I believe Arc Load won at a big price after that. And then I know later in the card, I think I'm skipping a race or two, Limousine Liberal wins at like 13 or 14 to 1. So coming into the Derby, and let me go back, going into, you know, this is before they had the auxiliary gate, I told everybody, we've got to have looking at Lee on the ticket in the in the Derby, even though he's in the one hole, because Corey picked up the mount, I think, late and was, you know, it's like, I'm not letting a horse in the rail on this track beat me. So we had like five or six horses live going into the Derby. And the only horse to pick six was paying on that we didn't have was Always Dreaming.
Oh, my God.
We were getting back. I know personally I was getting back $1.3 million if looking at Lee Run. And as a group, I think the smallest pick six was 500 and something thousand. And we had that. But then we got the pick fives. The pick five came back around 50,000 that day. We had all the same numbers in the pick five. I mean, it was like a $4 million score for our group if we get one of these horses home, and especially if we get looking at Leon. So going into the last race in the Kentucky Derby betting challenge, I had like 6,000 or something like that left, or I was up to 6,000. I think started off with 1,500 or 2,000. I can't remember. So, I mean, we're all like so excited for the hour in between, you know, the last race before the Derby and the Derby that it was just great. We were buzzing. So I was like, I don't know what am I. I mean, how am I going to play this contest? I said, you know, I don't have Always Dreaming. I just bet the 6,000 on Always Dreaming as a parachute in case he somehow wins. And sure enough, he falls on a lead, a rocking chair, goes around there, looking at Lee, gets the rail trip, runs second at 30-1. And we blow up everything and on all our bets. A couple of guys used them on a couple of small things. But I want to finish in third in the KDBC that year and was talking to myself. I mean, people were coming up and congratulating me. And I was like, y'all don't even understand. This is one of the worst, you know, contest cashes in history. So we fly back the next day. We flew back early, and I told my wife to pick me up and be ready to go to the Jazz Fest. And we went straight to the Jazz Fest, and I got blasted and listened to Kings of Leon and closed out the fest with Trombone Shorty. Nice. And they helped me get my sanity back.
The healing power of music, my friend.
Oh, man. That's crazy. So that's a fun group. I'll be with all those lunatics on Derby Day too.
Great stuff. Appreciate you, Frank. We'll check in, if only by text, and if you don't mind, I'll then share that with folks based on when we get a little bit closer. But I'm glad we did this. We would have just done 5 minutes of video. Instead, we get 20 minutes of audio, including a story. Not too bad. And it doesn't sound like you really, you know, we barely talked about Track Phantom anyway. So we're going to call this one a karmic, a serendipitous win for the airwaves. And thank you so much for making the magic happen. We'll check back in soon.
All right, brother. Good luck to everybody. Cash some tickets.
Contest players, there's a Kentucky Derby challenge coming up from our friends at ExpressBet on Derby Day, Natch. $3,000 entry. $1,000 goes to the prize pool. $2,000 part of the starting bankroll. Prizes include NHC seats, BCBC seats, UBC seats, and Pegasus seats. All the information is there on the Pegasus website for contest players looking to get involved, get a little something extra, see your name on the leaderboard Derby Day. Make sure you check it out, expressbet.com/tournaments. That URL once again, expressbet.com/tournaments.
So this is me we're talking about and the Kentucky Derby, which means no show about preparations are going to be complete without talking about what you're going to put on your head because – you know, I all year I'm wearing hats, but you go to the Derby and it's like amazing. It's like you're something back in time. And one of the questions I get from people, a male and female, is where should I go to get my Derby headgear? They just assume I'm going to know. And I'll tell you what, they're right because I have this long-standing relationship with Christine Moore and Cam Hats and Blake Seidel of the Blake Collection, and we welcome Blake back to these In the Money airwaves to talk about what's going on in their world ahead of this Kentucky Derby. Blake, has it reached a fever pitch yet? Are you guys making hats every second and dealing with a lot of last-minute requests at this point?
Well, Pete, always great to be with you, and yes, it is completely insane. It actually started really early this year. You know, it's the 150th, so people are really, really thinking ahead about what they're going to wear. And so January, we started taking orders, and it's been nonstop ever since. This week is insane. We're down to, like, the crunch week because we have to ship. You know, we're still shipping all over the country with these special orders and orders. So, yeah, It is completely crazy, and it's going to be so much fun.
That's great. Well, for people listening who want to look their best come Derby Day, are you guys still accepting orders at this late point? I mean, this show's dropping. This show will drop on Monday. So if somebody were to reach out to you today, tomorrow, do they still have a chance? Or are they better off at this point trying to find you, you know, during Derby week and work it that way?
Yeah, if they get in touch with us in the next couple of days, we can still do it. We'll do whatever we can. We have not closed our website, so it's still open. And that's at camhats.com. So you can always go on there. But if for anybody that sort of doesn't know what they're doing, once they get to Louisville, they could come to Rhodes, which is Rhodes for Him and Her, which is a great store. We also have great stuff at the Omni Hotel. And we also have stuff in the Derby store on the Churchill Downs property. So you can wait till the very last second, because a lot of people will get there and they'll be like, oh my gosh, I made a huge mistake. I'm not dressed the right way. But yeah, you can fix it that day. So there you go.
That's been me many times, and you guys have failed. Yeah. And that's Rhodes for Him and Her, RODES, for people,
yeah, that's
people
correct.
Looking for that
great,
one.
Yeah, great store, great store.
What do you recommend? Is it worth a trip to the website first, even if you're going to come see you guys in person, to maybe get like an idea of the styles? Or are you used to starting from scratch with both male and female styles?
Well, we do it all. But at this point, I would say go to the website and you can look at the men's collections and find a style that you really like, because the Derby, you know, is warm weather. So you want to look for straw. But there's a lot of great styles there that you can choose, and we always make it right to your head size. And at this late in the game, we'll still match, you know, that headband and feather, whatever, to your suit color, you know, whatever you want. So, I would do it like pretty quickly.
That is a great point, and I have seen you guys do some really nice touches, and you've helped me out at Breeders' Cups, etc., with that extra touch. But I have to say, I wouldn't advise getting overly concerned about that if you were somebody just looking to fit in and look your best. There's going to be plenty of stuff in the store, even if it's not matchy-matchy. You know, the styles are kind of timeless in a way that I think you can, yeah, do pretty well just coming in and grabbing something off the rack. As fun as that customization element is, when we get this late in the game, that might be one thing you have to fade.
Yep, and you're right on it when you say that styles are timeless, because men's styles do not change all that much. The fedora really is the king. I mean, it's been going back, you know, into horse racing back into the 20s and 30s before the bowler, after the bowler, you know, and yeah. So you can choose something. You'll find any store, really. You don't even have to come to us. I mean, you go to a good men's store, which they're harder to find, but they'll definitely hatch you up. And if you want to look at a website or you can just email us and call us and get any kind of suggestions. We're always ambassadors for the fashion part of racing. We'll help you out in any way we can. Tell us where you are. So we field a lot of calls at Lynn. It's always great to connect with all the horse racing fans out there in America and beyond, actually.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, an event like this, they're coming in from quite literally all over the world. As far as female styles go, I mean, obviously it's not as easy as we have it, but still, from what I've seen of your boutique setups, whether at tracks or at fashionable stores in and around Louisville, Lexington, Saratoga, there's a wide enough variety of styles that you're going to be able to find something if you roll in there on the female side. We do have plenty of female listeners as well, so I want to make sure we hit that note.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's the Derby, it's 150, so I mean, hats have always been the big go big or go home, you know, for the Derby for women. But fascinators are really popular too, because you have Oaks, everybody wears pink for that day. And the Derby, we're doing a lot of hand rolled red roses and red and coral colors for women. But yeah, so those colors, you know, we see, obviously know this is all coming up, so we do a lot of that style and color. So yeah, the women are well covered if they hit one of our stores or even go to our website.
Men who want to get in on the sort of pink for Oaks Day thing, I actually bought, and I haven't tried it on yet, I actually bought a pink suit. I may or may not actually end up wearing it. what for men, what would you recommend? I assume you could go with, you go with a pink band on a fedora or something like that if you want to get in on the pink action.
Yeah, no, exactly. And the feathers too on the side, you know, you can accent your tie, you can accent the color of the suit. There's many ways you can do that. Some guys like wear crazy cool shoes and they match those as well. So, and women do that as well, as well with their handbags, you know. So we can match anything like that. But think about, you know, kind of matching and having something that stands out. You're going to definitely stand out in a pink suit. So you might as well have a hat that's going to stand out too, you know?
I'm usually about the loudest dresser at a racing fashion event. Not so the Derby. Not at the Derby. I'm tame. So yeah, that's where I think I got the idea to maybe go over the top with the pink suit. We'll see if I go through with it. We also have another fashion question I'm asking myself, Blake, is we have a May 4th Derby this year. I'm a Star Wars nut, as people know. And May 4th, of course, you know, Star Wars Day. I may have to make an intergalactic nod to what I'm doing. I'm not sure what that means as far as headgear goes. Something beyond a Chewbacca mask. We'll see. I'll in the spirit of no good deed goes unpunished, I think I am going to darken your door this week, and maybe you can, maybe you guys can help me out, and we'll come up with something fun. All right, so we've gotten the basics about the hats out of the way. I want to talk to you about the Derby in general. I mean, is this for you? Obviously, it's a work event. You're going to be there. You're going to be. Do you know specifically what you're going to be doing Derby Day? Will you also get to have some fun? Have you even thought about who's going to win this race yet, or is that all to come?
No, I have thought about this, and I'm certainly looking at Fierceness and Sierra Leone and Forever Young. I mean, I'm looking at all of those. Catching Freedom, I think, is one of my favorites for some reason. I'm not quite sure, but I've been looking at that horse. But yeah, I always take a look and always lean on my friends like you to, like, you know, get the insider info. And of course, that's I usually place those bets because yeah, I'll tell you my new favorite place is the first turn building they built, that chalet. I was in there last year. It was spacious, really great view of the horses coming down there. And that's just a really great place. It was just really spacious and nice. So I'll be hanging out there most of the day or part of the day.
Excellent. So you don't, it isn't all work all the, I figure there's people who are buying stuff on the day of and was worried you'd be sucked into work thoroughly, but it sounds like you'll get to have some fun.
Yeah. We have a good staff that'll be there too. So we're all pitching in and doing stuff and at the different locations, but yeah, I get to get out there and have fun.
So camhats.com, that's the website. And just run us through one more time places in Louisville. You mentioned the Omni Hotel. That'll be right in the lobby, I assume. Where else do we want people to know about?
Actually, at the Omni, it's what they call the Bourbon Room. When you come in the lobby, it's to the right. It's a beautiful space. So we'll be in there. We'll be at Rhodes, which is out on Bardstown Road. And we'll be at the Derby store on the Churchill Downs. It's a big one, not that far from the paddock. You can't miss it. And we'll be at Christine's doing meet and greet hours there, and they'll be posted on our website.
I look forward to taking some pictures. I look forward to seeing you this week. Really appreciate you coming on today, Blake, at camhats.com, the place to go to learn more.
Yep. Pete, always a pleasure. Good to hear from you. Good to talk to you. Take care. Have a great Derby.
Today's show also brought to you by In the Money Plus. We've got our Derby package out. Drib-drabbing content starting now. So much good stuff you can't get anywhere else, including grid picks from the team, specific betting advice, trip notes on all the Derby runners, and much, much more. Check it out in themoneypodcast.com/plus. Hello and welcome to a special presentation from In the Money Media. PTF and Nick Tamaro here to do a way too early Kentucky Derby morning line prediction. And Nick, let's bring you in straight away with a question to talk to us about what the job of the morning line maker is. Let's start right there.
Yeah, so the morning line maker, which Mike Battaglia will make the Kentucky Derby morning line. He's been doing it for years, and Mike's an esteemed morning line maker, former announcer. And what his job is to do is the unenviable task of predicting how the public is going to bet the Kentucky Derby. Obviously, it is a much more difficult race than really any race run on the calendar in terms of working the line so that you get it to a manageable amount of points. And what I mean by that is that every price that you give a horse has an associated point value that's determined with the formula that you plug in for it, which the formula in this case is that number minus 1 divided by 100. And so doing that, you want to hold yourself to a point total around the 125 point mark. And I've put together a line at 126.7. And so what you're trying to do in doing that is predicting how the public is going to bet the race. Now, the difficulty of it is that generally you're confined to a certain set of odds. And what I mean by that is you're not going to make anybody above 50 to 1. you're going to try and make as few horses as possible, 50 to 1, in fact, because regardless of what their respective chances are, these horses did earn qualification to the Kentucky Derby. So they have some quality to them. So you want to be careful about making them too big a price. But inevitably, in a race like this with that many horses, you're going to have some at that number because there's just no alternative.
So just to underline how you're describing that, this is not a line that anybody's taking any bets on. This is a line somebody hired by the track is trying to make to give the public a guide of how the public is going to bet. And baked into that are certain suppositions. Well, for one thing, unlike if you were just a bettor trying to make money on the Kentucky Derby and you wanted to make your own line, you're going to want to make that line to 100 points, covering 100% of the outcomes. Why is it different in the morning line? Well, it's different because of the track takeout. For one thing, because of the track takeout, that math isn't going to add up to 100%. It's going to add up to 100% plus the takeout. Thus, you get to that number. And you mentioned the idea of you're not going to want to make any horses too short for a morning line. You're not going to want to make horses too long because, again, I mean, there's a little bit of a marketing element here. You don't want to insult any owner by saying your horse is 100 to 1. And you also don't want to make the race, and this doesn't come up so much in the Derby, but just generally speaking, make the race seem like it's uncompetitive by having there be too big of a favorite in this spot. Did I do a decent job explaining that?
100%. You got it exactly right. Yep. You want to remain respectful. I don't think I'm giving away any kind of state secret in saying that when I made the Breeders' Cup morning line in 2022, it was made very clear to me, nobody above 30. So you didn't want to insult any of them. And quite honestly, I don't really know how many horses I would have made above 30. But yeah, you don't want to lead anybody to believe that. By the way, that's not the only time I've gotten that directive. Right. So it happens, right? You want to make your line as accurate as possible. I'm somebody that doesn't push it to the 130, 135 mark. That will allow you to look a little bit more accurate. But really, what you're doing is you're spreading the money out too much because, you know, we're looking at 100 plus takeout. So really you're supposed to be in the 120 to 125 range. 126.7 is what I put together for the Derby. And that's about the top end of it.
Let's take a look at what you came up with here through this Excel spreadsheet. Is this the tool that you typically use, Excel, to put together your lines that you do when you make the morning line for a track like Keeneland?
Yeah, I use a Google Docs or a Google Sheet. So basically the same thing. And then I have the formulas plugged into the right. You put in the number, the odds, and then the formula automatically calculates. I will admit that in doing this, I did kind of take a look at some of the work that David Aragona had put together on DRF, just because David's an outstanding morning line maker and obviously has a great opinion. The only real difference between my line and his line was that I did make Forever Young a little bit higher. I don't know exactly the way to put it. I don't know if there might be a little Japanese fatigue after Dermasotagake ran poorly last year. Forever Young is a horse that's also probably not as embraceable as Dermasotagake. I also think that this is a Derby with two much clearer favorites. So, I mean, obviously our conversation starts with them. I have Fierceness at 3. I'm not going to be surprised if Mike Battaglia ultimately moves this horse down to 5 to 2. I do know, you know, kind of knowing what Mike has done a little bit in the past, I think he's going to make Sierra Leone pretty short as well. He has had a tendency of making the Kentucky-based horses a little bit shorter price-wise from a buyer speed figure standpoint, which historically, those are the biggest indicator of how races are going to get bet. It's really no contest. Fierceness is a much, much faster horse on buyer speed figure, so you would expect his price to be significantly lower than Sierra Leone. I think it's just that Sierra Leone has gotten to be so immensely popular. He has a running style that really a lot of the public finds very intriguing, and I think that's going to lead to him getting a pretty significant amount of support. So I have them at 3 and 4. I feel like Catching Freedom, who has kind of really attractive connections, he has an upward pattern. He won a race very impressively in the Louisiana Derby. I think his running style is, while not necessarily ideal for a race like the Derby, he feels like a horse that's going to get a lot of support. And Brad Cox's runners in general do get a lot of it. So I had him at 8, and those were the only 3 horses that I made a single digit.
Were you surprised, as I'm sure you noticed while doing a little research for this, that in England right now, there are multiple books that actually have Sierra Leone as the clear favorite? I'm taking your point. Normally, in a normal line, buyers have primacy in terms of how the public bets. I've been on record as saying if the Kentucky Derby were just a race on a Thursday at Aqueduct and there was the speed figure difference between Fierceness and Sierra Leone, Fierceness would be like an even money shot practically, just given how many lengths faster he is on paper. But the narratives come into play in the Kentucky Derby, and there's so many narratives about Fierceness needing to have things his own way and the in and out pattern and all this. I think you've got it right here. This is what I would have done. But I mean, I think there are people out there, and I'm not going to fall out of my chair even if Sierra Leone ends up being favored over Fierceness based on what I've seen in the international market. Did you even give that half a thought?
Half a thought. Yeah. I did. Knowing that you had told me that and being familiar with that right now, you know, I think there's a little bit of recency bias to that. I think there's always a reaction immediately after the race is run. And I remember you and I speaking on the Monday after the Bluegrass about Sierra Leone being favored in some of the international books. And I thought to myself, you know, I think as people sit down and actually start looking at the PPs and realize how good Fierceness looks on paper, I think he'll ultimately end up going off favored. Reminds me a little bit of the Zandon Epicenter conversation from a few years ago, when a lot of the chatter before the Derby was that Zandon was going to be the morning line favorite and that he might end up favored. And ultimately, you know, I think that when people took a step back and they let themselves kind of think about the race a little bit more, they came to the conclusion that he could not be favored in there. And I think it's kind of the same conclusion with Sierra Leone. When you look at him, you look at his PPs against a horse like Fierceness's, you just can't really get to that number. So Epicenter and Zandon respectively ended up at 4 and 6, but you had other horses in there that took a lot of money. Taba went off 5 to 1. Messier went off 7 to 1. It's just that there's no third choice that's really supposed to soak up any type of money in here. And that's what will keep Fierceness and Sierra Leone as the two shortest prices by a real distance as far as Derby betting goes. You know, then we'll have that group of three or four horses in the 8 to 16 to 1 range. And I've tried to capture those horses, at least with Catching Freedom, Resilience. Resilience is a horse who I can't really figure out how he's going to get bet either. I mean, his Wood Memorial figure looks slow, but otherwise he looks like a horse who's kind of coming up in terms of recent performance. And yeah, he beat a suspect field in the wood, but he did it very impressively. I've not really taken a deep dive into the Thoroughgraph sheets, but I should in order to get a sense of what some of those players might be looking at. He's obviously not going to be fast enough on those, but he's a horse that will at least offer some appeal.
Are there any other narratives that you took into account putting this together? One, I was guessing maybe you had Just Steel on the list where you did with thoughts that there'll be a lot of stories about Dwayne Lucas and this horse maybe cycling back into form under the Twin Spires. But I mean, I'm really hung up on that idea, that narrative, some of which we don't even know yet because they're going to have to do with how horses look when they get in the grounds, but that they affect this line more than many others. Is that something you took into consideration?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, it feels like I've seen a lot of the quote-unquote wise guys say that Just Steel is a horse that they could see themselves betting. So I didn't want to make him too big a price. And his last running line actually looks fine. It looks like one that people could bet a little bit off of. I've always been skeptical of this horse distance-wise. And, you know, you wonder a little bit about whether he can ultimately be a winning type. He's probably a horse that will just fight it out and end up getting a piece of it. But he's going to at least take some money. There were other horses that have been popular throughout the spring that it was unclear exactly how the public is going to handle them, like Track Phantom, who, you know, feels like he's a bit of a phantom in the sense that nobody's talking about him. And he was a horse that's been well-backed in all of his prior starts in 2024. He's also going to be forwardly placed. He's in the hands of a trainer that's done very well in this race and hasn't won it, but has had horses run well, 2 second-place finishes, at least in the last 7 years or so. So, you know, he was a horse who I thought I didn't want to be too flippant with regards to. The horse that's going to ultimately, how much money he gets is going to determine where a lot of these horses land price-wise is Forever Young. So I don't know exactly what to make of him. I made him 12, could have made him 10. I feel like Just a Touch is a horse who's going to take money as well. I think there are some distance limitations, but he's still a horse that's only making his fourth career start. He ran a very, very strong race in the Bluegrass, so it's going to be no great surprise if he comes right back with another strong performance, and he's at least going to get a lot of support at the windows as well.
Those were the two I was going to ask you about as my next two questions, really, as we sort of go down the odds line. You sort of already mentioned about Forever Young, and that for me is one where I feel like that could go. I mean, there's some world in which he goes there, he burns up the track, and he's 8 to 1. I can't really imagine him being any shorter than that. Or it could go the other way and be twice that. So, I mean, I feel like I would have done what you did, just sort of hit it right in the middle here at 12. But I almost feel like it's one of those funny things where 12 might be the right morning line, even though like the right morning line guess at this point, though I kind of feel like the narrative is going to push it either down or up. And there's just really no way of knowing right now. So you split the difference. I mean, do you take my point on that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, I know right now on Odds Checker, he's 8. So he'll probably end up being more of that. You know, I think you could probably on my line, maybe move Catching Freedom up, move Forever Young down, leave just a touch at 10, and you end up just reversing those two. It feels like I'm probably in the ballpark on everybody else. I mean, there are horses on this Odds Checker that I'm looking at right now. They're obviously not running, so it's a little tough to use those as a gauge. But yeah, I think, like I said, he's kind of the linchpin for how the rest of the race gets bet, because if he takes a bunch of money, you're going to have some horses drift up that otherwise, you know, maybe we would have thought at one point they could be a shorter price.
My tip on using Odds Checker, because it's a compiler, and so it'll bring in any half-ass book that, you know, who knows if you could even really get a bet down on, but they have a line, they'll pull that in. If you drill down one level to look at the actual books, there's one bookie in particular, and they don't pay us, so I'm not plugging them, but they're the one that appears first. They're generally the sharpest lines. And if anybody from that book wants to pay us, you know, I'm easy man to find. So we're almost out of time here, Nick, but I want to each pull in one horse at a bit more of a price to talk about. And the one that I am hoping you are exactly right about in here, and I think you have a good chance to be right about the morning line guess, but I think is an interesting horse, is Honor Marie. You know, maybe not so much to win, but as a horse to be there in that, in the top three or four, and maybe be a horse I'd look to be keying some trifectas and superfectas bottom up from, I feel real good about this. I mean, I could see him taking a little wise guy support, but I can't see him being lower than 20. And boy, at 30 or higher, definitely a horse I'd be interested in. You feel real good about that 30-1 guess on him? And what do you think about him as a horse? The case basically being good closer, cycling into form, one that, you know, we heard from Frank McGoey this winter was not fit for that first start back, might be ready for a peak effort in the third race of the form cycle.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a look to him, no doubt. He's probably ends up, I think, in the 25-1 range. You know, probably deserves to be somewhere around there. So he was a horse that I think you probably could try to make 20 if possible. Could be circling into form, as you said, has run well locally. It feels like historically in this race, there's always been a certain amount of attention that the Kentucky Jockey Club alums get. And I think that's part of the reason why he could end up taking a little bit more money. So, yeah, I wouldn't sleep on him at all.
Does have that potentially all-important race over the track. Churchill, I mean, this is narrative too, but there's some truth to it. Not a track every horse necessarily likes. Why don't you pull one of the long shots in just to yap about either one you struggled with making the line or one you'd be interested in betting at the price, something on that order.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you two. They're both horses that are going to be making up ground, and I don't necessarily love going with, you know, deep closing types, but Mystic Dan is a horse who I think was very dressed up off the Southwest. I feel like he's now a little dressed down. I think his Arkansas Derby may have been better than people realized. He was taken out of his game a little bit. He really made the only meaningful off the pace move. I could see him running a much better race at Churchill. I think if it's a day, especially where being inside is not a problem, I could imagine Brian Hernandez Jr. trying to run the Calvin Burrell type of trip here. So he's one. I also think Domestic Product is a horse that's a little bit better than his PPs indicate. I think that Tampa Bay Derby fig is about 6 points low. And I think we're going to hear reports on him training relatively well. The other thing is that Irad is going to ride this horse. So he's not going to be 30-1. He'll end up being shorter than that. The problem is on form, he's 30-1. So you can't make him much shorter than that. But those are two horses I think that I could see myself using a little bit underneath, trying to slide into the number here. And, you know, if they end up, it seems a little too chaotic for them to end up under a horse like Sierra Leone. So I could see myself kind of playing them a little bit more under just a touch and fierceness and kind of trying to beat Sierra Leone on some of those tickets. But they're horses that I would definitely wouldn't be mind being alive to in you know, maybe some of the backups in the multi-race bets and ultimately trying to just squeeze them in there for a piece of it.
I'm scrolling through one more time. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see what Nick hung on all of these horses. And just one last note before we get out of here, just another positive on Domestic Product. I did the show with Sean Borman earlier in the week. And the question I forgot to ask him was, what, you know, he's so into how horses finish. And I was like, well, if he doesn't have a fast finishing speed out of that Tampa Bay race with the slow final time, you could toss him. Well, that was not the case. He said he came home, I think he said in around 100. We'll get to talk to Sean again and ask him that question to confirm. But I mean, it was a proper late pace number that he ran. And if you're saying you think the final was low anyway, all of a sudden he starts to get interesting, you know, maybe more as a third and fourth. I think we're out of time here, Nick, but really appreciate your time today. Last thing, just for the viewers, or if you're listening, go over to YouTube and give us your comments on Nick's morning line. Nothing, no gratuitous shots, please. If you weren't right for a certain place with the letters, maybe put your comments somewhere else for this one. But for our loyal viewers and listeners on the In the Money Media Network, we'd love to hear from you. What did Nick get right? What did Nick get wrong? You know, what do you think of my hat? Whatever you want to put in there, we'll keep the comments going, and Nick and I will both pop in there and have an opportunity to interact with you a little bit. We appreciate you, Nick, and we'll be talking soon. I couldn't resist that little dig in there. I'm a small, small man. Contest jockey. Let's talk contest jockey for just 1 second. We had that really fun event, gave away a $500 free win bet on the Preakness last weekend. Not sure what the next event on contest jockey is going to be, but there's going to be one soon, and you're going to want to get involved. This is a great new, super fun way of playing the horses. Best thing to do, just go ahead now and register for your free account. You will get all the news about what's coming up in this really fun way of playing the horses. Think No Limit Hold'em meets horse racing. ContestJockey.com. That's the place to go to sign up for a free account today over at ContestJockey.com. Hello and welcome to a special presentation from In the Money Media. We're talking about Kentucky Derby pedigrees. Loads of info all about the Derby across our In the Money Media website. We want to hear from you. Let us know. Are you a pedigree geek? Who do you think is going to be the most suited to this mile and a quarter test on the first Saturday in May? Let us know who you think is going to win. We'd love to keep this conversation going in the comments. I don't know a whole lot about pedigrees. I'll be honest with you. I know what I know as a handicapper, but when it comes to talking about a topic like this, I'm going to reach to somebody who really, really loves this stuff. And I'm fortunate to have with us today a woman who's been writing about pedigrees for us over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. She is Alex Henry. Alex, how are things?
Things are great. Super excited to talk about pedigrees and geek out a little bit.
We're going to start off looking at these horses at the top of the market because they're the ones people, I think, have the most questions about. And we won't get so much into the form and other things. You can find those videos elsewhere. You know, if you subscribe to our In the Money page and click the notification bell, you will not miss any of the 30 or so videos I think we're going to have in the end covering this race. But here I really want to talk about these horses vis-a-vis the mile and a quarter. And Alex, the horse I want to start talking about is the presumptive favorite, though Sierra Leone and his backers may have something to say about that. I want to talk about fierceness. So much has been made about this horse in terms of his brilliance, the will he or won't he, which one is going to show up. What about just on a simple bloodlines perspective? What do you think about fierceness and his ability to run this mile and a quarter?
So he really reminds me a lot of his sire, City of Light. Lest we forget, City of Light won the Pegasus World Cup and Oaklawn Handicap, really flashed a lot of brilliance throughout his career, and fierceness has done just that. Of course, field topping Buyer of 110, field topping Thoroughgraph of -3.5. In terms of pedigree, I believe he's suited. So as aforementioned, that's City of Light won those two graded stakes over 9 furlongs. And so while he may not have been able to get 10, that's where the dam side comes in. And he's out of a mare called Nona Bella. She herself by Stay Thirsty. We remember Stay Thirsty as winner of the Traverse Stakes and runner up in the Belmont Stakes. So we know he at least liked to get classic distances, especially as a three-year-old. He's able to infuse that precociousness into his, his offspring and his grand offspring. His dam didn't really do too much. Nona Bella only raced 5 times, winning 2 of them. And those 2 wins came at pretty short distances. Her dam was Nona Mia, and she carried quite a bit of stamina influence from her sire, a Belmont Stakes winner, Empire Maker. And that class is also just infused all into his dam line with her dam, Holy Babette, who you may recognize on the pedigree of Cairo Prince, who won the Holy Bull Stakes 8.5 furlongs of the Nashua Stakes at a mile. So I think he has that wonderful dam line that has that nice pedigree, a Belmont winner, Belmont runner-up, Travers winners, and then has that really scary fast speed from City of Light, who was also able to carry over a route of ground.
And we've seen this idea that's been espoused by trainers. We've had Brad Cox on the show saying this, that these days they almost look more for the mile and a 16th, mile and an eighth type pedigrees, and then they have brilliance and they train them to get the rest. So when you have a horse that's shown this kind of brilliance and has that kind of damn side pedigree, I wouldn't worry so much about the fact that City of Light himself wasn't a mile and a quarter winner. Sounds like if something doesn't mean he has to win, but if he doesn't win, it ain't the pedigree that's going to beat this one. Is that fair to say?
I think that's very fair to say. Yep.
Let's move on to the other horse who may end up vying for favoritism, if you believe the bookmakers in England anyway. I'm talking about a very, very likable horse in the form of Sierra Leone, another one who's really done everything right, a progressive type. Suppose he needs to act a little better when it gets time to go into the stalls, but you know they're going to be working on that one. Same question with him. From a pedigree point of view, at what distance do you think this one's going to be his best? Do you think he'll be suited to a test like the Kentucky Derby?
I think he's another one who's extremely well-suited for the Kentucky Derby. I really struggle to think of another year where the top three most likely betting choices are quite rich in stamina in terms of their pedigree. So Sierra Leone being son of Gunrunner, it's, you know, hard to give an appropriate introduction to Gunrunner. You know, he's, I would say, equaled, if not done better as a sire as he did on the racetrack. Just a brilliant racehorse. He's able to sire anything from, you know, sprint killers like an Echo Zulu to horses that like a little bit of more of a route of ground like Taba and Cyberknife. So there's no issues on the sire side. So I would like to focus a little bit more on his dam side. So he's out of a mare called Heavenly Love, herself by Malibu Moon. And she's stakes placed. She's a daughter of a stakes. She is a stakes placed daughter of a mare called Darling My Darling by Deputy Minister. Her dam, Darling My Darling, is quite the producer. She foaled a grade two winner in a Forever Darling, who in turn actually foaled a Forever Young. So there's connections all over the place in this field. So that kind of relates to Sierra Leone and Forever Young a little bit, who I know we'll speak about a little bit later. But yeah, so I think that there's plenty of stamina there. If you look further back, you know, Heavenly Love broke her maiden at Kentucky Downs over 6 furlongs. That's kind of a testing weird track. Then she, you know, trainer Mark Cassie thought that her aptitude would translate well into dirt, and entered her in Keeneland's Grade One Alcibiades Stakes. And she won that by 5.5 lengths over eventual Grade Two winner Princess Warrior. So there's just class all over his pedigree. I don't think the stamina will be a problem at all. If there is a problem, it's going to be he's stuck in traffic and can't get out.
I'm very intrigued by this pedigree connection. I mean, in human terms, what are we talking about here? Second cousins? Like how? I don't recall two as closely related horses being competing in a classic race, at least not in the USA before. How notable is that to you? And do you have any sort of human analogy for it?
I guess you could call it a second or a third cousin on the dam side, of course. But anything's a positive, in my opinion. We already know Forever Young can get basically ran a mile and a quarter in the UAE Derby. So I really don't have any questions. Sierra Leone has run fast. His come home times have been quite fast. He's run fast buyers. His thoroughgraph backs that up as well. I think that these cousins could do quite well in the Kentucky Derby this year. I'll definitely have an exacta, cousin exacta.
I have a feeling that will be a well-represented exacta among your portfolio of plays. This is the obvious segue to talk about Forever Young. You were on our JRA-sponsored Japanese Runners special, so you've tipped your hand to me anyway about how much you like this horse. The perfect 5 for 5, overcoming adversity. We've talked about the dam side of the pedigree being suited and the fact that you have to worry a little bit less about how suited they are on pedigree when they've essentially already done the task. But at least for academic purposes, tell us about the sire side and how far you think this horse really wants to run.
Absolutely. I think this horse wants to run all darn day long. He's sired by Japanese royalty and Real Steel, who has plenty of U.S. influence as well as Japanese influence. So Real Steel, he was born in the same generation, unfortunately, to his detriment, as stars like Duramente, Maurice, Kitasan Black. And despite this, he still acquitted himself well as a racehorse, winning the 2016 Dubai Turf. That was over about nine furlongs, approximately. That's 1,800 meters. And although he wasn't versing those familiar rivals back then, still to be something to be noted, that's a very respected race on turf. It took more than 12 months for Real Steel to find his next win, and that came in the Grade 2 Mainichi Okan, and that was also over 1,800 meters or 9 furlongs. And this horse just really showed up all the time. He really was a hard knocker. He was in the money 11 of 17 times, like won over $7 million. And of course, his sire being my favorite non-US bred runner in Deep Impact, a 2005 Japanese Triple Crown winner. And Deep Impact himself having sired a male Triple Crown winner in Japan. And I'd like to recall, for those not familiar with the Japanese Triple Crown, the longest race is the Japanese St. Ledger, which is over 3,000 meters. So that's what, almost 2 miles long. So stamina has to be very much an influence for the horses to get that route of ground. Also want to call out Deep Impact was the sire of female Triple Crown winner Gentle Donna. And, I really just love how, as opposed to in the U.S. where we kind of breed for, perhaps speed on the sire side and more stamina on the dam side or on the dam line or vice versa, this horse has it on both sides. We did talk a little bit about his dam, Forever Darling, who is a U.S. Kentucky bred mare who was purchased and sent over for broodmare duties in Japan. And, she acquitted herself well she won over $200,000. She won the Grade 2 Santa Inez Stakes, and that was over 6.5 furlongs, so that she has that speed. But she, also acquitted herself well, being second in the listed Anita Angel's Flight Stakes over 7 furlongs. But Breeder Yoshida has had success in the past with horses like this, kind of infusing that speed and stamina. To call out a little bit more of her stamina, she was imported in foal to Japan, in foal to Frankel, actually. That foal was named Mon Favori. He's won three times, and in the most recently won over $600,000 over a route of ground as well. So I think that she has the ability to produce horses that, have a little bit of her speed and are sharp, but also a nice blend of stamina as well, by all means. And of course, as we mentioned earlier with Sierra Leone, this horse is like second or third cousin of Sierra Leone. So, and we talked about the stamina influences in his pedigree on the dam side. So I don't have any concerns about this horse being competitive over 10 furlongs.
All right. At the end of the video, I'm going to come back to you and ask you to try to split the top three. It's a hard question from this far out in terms of where your support is leaning for the Kentucky Derby. But, positives are important when it comes to pedigree. Negatives can be even more important. We don't have anything super low in odds, though one horse that could be in the 12, 15 to 1 range that we were talking about before. Let's talk about who you question their ability to get this mile and a quarter. Do a couple of minutes on that before we throw in a long shot that you like on pedigree, and then we'll bring you back for the final answer as we get to the very end of the video, Alex. Start with one of the ones that you have a little bit of a question about.
Absolutely. First and foremost, Track Phantom is on my no-no list. Has a great pedigree for like the Met Mile maybe, but not for this mile and a quarter test. He's by quality rode out of Miss Sunset by Into Mischief. He has a Trunix rating of A++, so great rating. But again, I don't think he wants any part of 10 furlongs or a mile and a quarter. He did win the Grade 3 Le Compte, but he's come up short in the Risen Star. And, we can blame the trip. We can blame not liking the racetrack, but he was disappointing fourth in the Louisiana Derby. And he came home in 37.91 seconds, his last 3 furlongs in the Louisiana Derby. He really backed up from the lead to finish fourth. So his only wins, for my opinion, have come when he's able to dictate the pace, kind of slow it down, have it his own way. And of course, the pedigree doesn't help here. So Quality Road, for himself, kind of like City of Light, he went up to 9 furlongs, a mile and an eighth. But when that extra furlong was added in the Travers and the Jockey Gold Cup and the Breeders' Cup Classic, he wasn't able to sustain a run. So I firmly believe that's a hard cutoff 9 furlong top performer right there. His Dam, Miss Sunset, was a super cool horse when she raced. She had 20 starts. She won half of them, won 10 times. Very competitive cowbred, but in sprint distances. She was a 2017 Raven Run Stakes winner at Keeneland over 7 furlongs. She only managed to carry her speed longer than 7 furlongs once, and that was in a listed stakes on Tapita at Golden Gate. So I really don't see any help here of Quality Roads, lack of stamina, lack of desire for classic distances. The Dam isn't going to help here at all. Only one other foal to race from this Dam named O'Connor Sunset, and he's most recently won a 6.5 furlong allowance race at Charlestown. So definitely not seeing it here with Track Phantom.
Yeah, and that supports the visual impression and what the clock is saying. And I think this info could be the most useful on that. You know, you don't want to spend too much time, you know, knocking a horse that's going to be 20-1, et cetera. But at the same time, for your exotic bets, you need to know. I mean, this is a horse that's going to be there quite possibly at the pace call, quite possibly not there at the wire. You know, no offense to him, maybe a cutback and it'll do great things going shorter, but probably not for Derby Day, at least not on your and my tickets. Who's the other runner you had some questions about?
Yeah, the other runner I have a question about, major question, is Stronghold. So our Santa Anita Derby winner received an 89 buyer for that effort. He's by Ghost Zapper. So his pedigree's tricky. So like we have Ghost Zapper, right? And we're like, oh, like Breeders Cup Classic winner. He got that massive buyer, like very visually impressive. Like he clearly was a 1.25 mile horse. However, he has Jimmy Creed on the bottom side. So his Dam Spectator by Jimmy Creed. This Dam was a grade 2 winner as a 2-year-old in the Sorrento Stakes over 6.5 furlongs. She was mildly competitive as a 3-year-old, finishing second to the queen, Midnight Bisou, in the 2018 Santa Anita Oaks. But Spectator's out of a Henny Hughes mare. So we have Jimmy Creed on top for her, Henny Hughes on the bottom, not really adding anything regarding stamina there. And speed everywhere. And then to add to that, we have Swiss Yodeler, as a, you know, a sire, a great grandsire on the Dam side. We have Hooked on the Feeling, the Dam of Jimmy Creed, who also was pure speed as well. She was multiple stakes winner sprinting. And we also have Meadow Lake, who was notable for siring precocious young speedsters as well. I really don't like the way he's been running as well in these longer distances. So of note, he has the slowest final furlong time and the slowest final 3-furlong come home time of any prep winner on my list. He came home in 38.69 seconds at the Santa Anita Derby, and that's definitely reflected in that 89 buyer speed figure. He can't even crack a 90 before the Derby, so I just really think he's a toss for me.
He'll probably take a little. I think he might end up taking a little bit of money. I think that I've heard a couple of stories about him. That's an interesting one. And you make a real good case on pedigree. We should point out that we're not meaning to, you know, bash these horses. I mean, you talked about in the context of Track Phantom, the Knicks rating, something that is very respected that breeders use. But that's more for, I think, isn't that more for trying to gauge, you know, a chance of being a successful winner and or brilliance? We're talking quite specifically about a very difficult task here, running 10 furlongs this early in the career. I did want to just underline the difference between a good pedigree and a good pedigree for this, lest we upset any of the breeders out there.
Exactly. And just for those who aren't as familiar with the true Knicks rating or familiar with Knicks at all, as a, you know, other than, you know, Knicks Go, the horse. So Knicks and True Knicks as a company. So what is, as PTF, as you said, they take the sire and the sire's results as compared to the pedigree, like the grandsire of a hypothetical offspring. So for example, when I say, and even Stronghold has an excellent pedigree, you know, being by Ghost Zapper out of a Jimmy Creed mare. So he's an A++ rating on the True Knicks website, an excellent mating. In fact, when I ran, I tabulated the mating, it asked me to reach out to the farm so I can get my mare bred to go Zapper because his pedigree was so good. So the breeders have done an excellent job there. It just takes other things into consideration, like a close relatives. Do they share a grandsire, a great grandsire, a sire line, or a dam line? So that's when we talk about Knicks. Excellent breeding, but just not my choice for a 10 furlong test.
And for the uninitiated, the concept of a Knick is the way basically a Is it quite specifically the way a sire and a dam sire and how those intersect? That intersection is called a nick in the breeding world, if I understand it correctly. Again, not really exactly my world. I'm usually just betting on the things. But boy, any chance I get to learn about the history and get into the pedigree, I love to take it. You had a long shot. We got two more questions for you. One was a long shot you wanted to mention, and my crack tech team, we did not have this graphic at the beginning of the video, but we do have one now that I can flash up on the screen for this horse. So tell us the long shot you think has a shot on the bloodlines.
Absolutely. My long shot, and with the 20th out of 20 on the list right now of Derby points, just got in, is Grandmo the First. He's a Trunix A rating, so another great job on the breeding there. He's very well bred. He's by Uncle Mo out of Lily So Fair by Giant's Causeway. He's run, you know, his third graph rating has been very progressive. His last two starts, he's paired sixes, so he's poised to move forward in this next start. Although he's only an allowance winner as a two-year-old, he's been very competitive. He's been right there for show money in the Tampa Bay Derby, won by Domestic Product, and also third in the Florida Derby, won by, of course, Fierceness, as mentioned earlier. And Uncle Mo, how can we give Uncle Mo an introduction? Gorgeous, gorgeous, dark-based son. Stallion, and two-year-old champion, Breeders' Cup juvenile champion, has already sired a Kentucky Derby winner and Nyquist in 2016. I want to really highlight the similarity in breeding between Nyquist and Grandmo the First. So Nyquist dam, his on his dam side, her grandsire was Stormcat, and Grandmo the First also shares that same breeding. So again, we talk about nicks. That's a pretty interesting nick, although it's not as close up as a grandsire, for example, directly from Grandmo the First. It is still, you know, sons of Giant's Causeway. For Grandmo the First, you know, that son, or son of Stormcat, excuse me, Giant's Causeway being a son of Stormcat, and then for Nyquist, Forestry being a son of Stormcat on that side. So that's the connection there. His dam, Lily So Fair, carries stamina through her sire. Of course, Giant's Causeway, he globe-trotting, awesome, awesome runner on turf and dirt.
The Iron Horse.
Iron Horse, yes. Her dam is Wildwood Flower, who has been quite a prolific producer. Wildwood Flower, so this is, again, Grandmo the First Grand Dam on his dam side, his dam's dam. Wildwood Flower has foaled two graded stakes winners already, in the unfortunate ill-fated Materiality, but boy was he brilliant when he was running and when he was healthy. He was a Florida Derby winner, the Islamorada handicap winner, both over 9 furlongs, so, you know, stamina indication there. And also, she foaled My Miss Sophia, so winner of the Gazelle over 9 furlongs, and second in the Kentucky Oaks, of course, over 9 furlongs as well. And more amazing stakes ability in this family too. My Miss Sophia was bred to Warfront and subsequently produced multiple turf graded stakes winner Annapolis, who just recently went off to stud. And Wildwood Flowers 2016 offspring has also stamped herself as a producer. Her name is Wildwood Rose. And any guesses on who she's the dam of? Well, hopefully a filly by the name of Leslie's Rose is ringing a bell. Our grade one, 2024 grade one Ashland Stakes winner, who is poised for a great run at Kentucky Oaks the day before the Derby. So just class all over this pedigree. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Rich Strike. Just, you know, kind of always shows up. He always is, you know, in that trifecta. But I think that with the class and the stamina influences, he could be a sleeper long shot on Derby Day.
Very, very interesting for underneath potentially. And who knows, as you invoked the name of Rich Strike, sometimes these horses you can maybe make a wise guy underneath case for step up. Last question. If I made you pick from this far out between those top three in the market, which way are you leaning?
How can I go against my JRA family? I got to go for our young man. Fierceness might wake up with a tummy ache and not want to run. Sierra Leone might be behind a wall of horses and come late. I'm choosing Forever Young based on this logic. I know he hates kickback. That's been a publicized, well-publicized thing from his trainer, Yahagi-san, has said from the UAE Derby and from the Saudi Derby or Saudi Cup. So that means jockey Sakai is going to have him out on the outside, and he's tactical enough not to throw a Crown Pride and be rank and want the lead. he can sit, and he's shown he can sit. He can sit almost near last if he needs to. But the whole thing is that he's a big horse. He's last clocked in at 525 kilograms. That's a big boy. So almost 1,200 pounds there. He's going to be on in the clear, hopefully, on the outside, not getting kicked back. And just if he's good enough, he's good enough. And he'll be grinding late.
Oh, I accidentally took you out there for a second. I meant to take a picture out. Great stuff, Alex. Really appreciate you. This is what happens when you try to produce yourself here on a Friday night. Really appreciate all the great information and looking forward to working with you a lot more as 2024 marches on. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you.
For Alex, I'm PTF. Make sure you subscribe to our In the Money channel on YouTube. Drop us a comment as well. Click that notification bell. Do all those good things. We're going to be back with way more Kentucky Derby content starting right now. This is our Japanese runners at the Kentucky Derby show, brought to you by our friends at the JRA, Japan Racing Association, who many nights, many Saturday nights into Sunday mornings through the year, present you fantastic content you can wager on your ADW. You can get information about these races right over at inthemoneypodcast.com, including past performances and analysis from the team. The team of which I speak is here with me now. We recently had as a guest on one of our mini pods that will become part of the monster pods, coming to us from Japan, Toshi Onokubo. Toshi, how are things?
Everything good, Pete.
We've also got a woman who's been writing great stuff about pedigree for these horses on the Derby Trail for us. We're going to be doing a whole separate video about that. She's Alex Henry.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And from the TDN, we also bring in Alan Carasso, returning to these airwaves. Alan, everything good?
Hey, guys, everything's great. How about you guys?
Terrific. We got Derby fever. You know, it's spreading, and there's no stories, as far as I'm concerned, that quite match the intensity of the coverage of these Japanese Derby runners. People are hungering for the information in a world where we know so much about so many of the American runners. We bring in some real X factors in terms of these horses coming in who haven't raced in the U.S. before. I'll start with Toshi for a question about TO Password that we didn't get to talk about in our in the interview we did that you can find elsewhere here on YouTube. And this one is about the connections, Toshi. What can you tell us about the human connections associated with TO Password?
I mean, TO Password is, you know, owned by Mr. Zasa. And, you know, trained by Daisuke Takayanagi, traveling with his stable, you know, companion, Teo Saint Doni. I mean, that would be, you know, interesting one. You know, they brought, you know, the company horse, and Teo Saint Doni will be running the grade two before the Kentucky Derby. I mean, on the Oaks Day on Friday. That's as far as I know or I heard. And, you know, he's unbeaten horse. And another interesting factor would be the, you know, the Japanese in based in Canada, Kazushi Kimura will be riding Teo Password, who recently got awarded by the Sovereign Award again. I mean, that's three consecutive years. I mean, he's definitely one of the best jockeys, Japanese jockeys in the world. I mean, he's not the best, so that would be highly, you know, interesting part of the connection, you know, Japanese horse ridden by Japanese jockey, but who's not based in Japan.
It is an interesting story to follow. In our other video, Toshi, we sort of, spoiler alert, I'll give away the end. Interesting, talented horse, maybe one who's going to be on the outside looking in as far as it comes to the chances in a race like the Kentucky Derby. Alex, I'll bring you in to ask you if you think that assessment is fair. Where do you think this horse stacks up quality-wise, not just with the other, with the USA runners, but even with a runner from Japan like Forever Young?
You know, to be honest, he wouldn't be one I would take on logic, but being a fan of JRA, being a fan of the Japanese racing product, I'll definitely have several dollars on him on the day if he makes it in the starting gate. Personally, I don't know if he's going to crown pride it if he makes the gate and just send the lead. He did win on the lead in his last start, the win in Urine Race, the Fukuryu Stakes. That was over 1800 meters. So I don't think distance is the question. I think it's more of a class test.
It's an interesting observation about the pace angle. I hadn't even thought about that, Alex, until you said it. We've talked a little bit about this horse's pedigree. That's a topic I want Alan to chime in on. Alex described it, Alan, as a class test. Is there anything in this pedigree that suggests to you he might have the class to succeed at a level like this?
I mean, his sire was or is a top dirt horse in Japan, and King Kamehameha can get you any kind. I mean, King Kamehameha was the sire of Chua Wizard, who ran well in the Dubai World Cup. So you would think top over bottom, that pedigree says that 10 furlongs is definitely in the go zone for this horse. I'm a little bit concerned, having watched the Fukurayu, exactly what his best distance is going to be, because he really started to look for the line there in the last 50 or 100 meters. And the runner-up, Arade Tabashiru, was getting to him with every stride. So I have something of a doubt on pedigree to begin with. I mean, what can you say? I mean, this horse has made two starts. You're going to send him into the, throw him to the wolves in the Derby. How does he class up with these? My hunch is that he's going to struggle.
I want to bring back that idea of the pace angle to you, Toshi. Could you see the connections bothering to come here? It's a horse that has some speed. Could you see them sending for the lead, hammer and tongs here, and maybe being a pace factor in this race, if nothing else? Does that scenario make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, he can be, but, his debut race, he didn't race, and then second time out, he's a little bit keener, and even he's not Hurry Relax and during, running the race. So not sure where he's going to be in the Kentucky Derby. Of course, depends on the pace, but I don't think he's going to be, desperate to read the race. So I think wherever the place he can, settle, that's what they want to do. So not sure he's going to, definitely for the read.
To be determined whether or not he's going to try to lead. Maybe we'll get some clues when he arrives at Churchill Downs. You know, we've seen so many of these Japanese horses impress us in the flesh at Breeders' Cups and Kentucky Derby before. That's a story we're going to continue to follow. We're going to have updates from the grounds, and something that we'll be paying attention to if he's showing some of that early speed energy. Let's pivot and talk about Forever Young. Now, this is a horse who USA fans will have heard a lot more about at this stage of the game. I deliberately left this out of the conversation, Toshi, in terms of the little mini pod we did before, but I'm curious to get a sense of how excited you are. How excited are Japanese racing fans in general about Forever Young? Not only has he shown what he could do in Japan, but he's shown he could take his act on the road. How excited are you about Forever Young?
I mean, he must be, an exciting one for Japan and Japanese racing, and also, fans and connections. So, I mean, he's, obviously unbeaten, five from five, and, won the Saudi Derby and then Dubai, the UAE Derby. And, particularly, in Saudi, he looked beaten, and, he won it from, nowhere. So I think it's, definitely interesting journey to follow, and for Forever Young to be one of the competitive horse in the pinnacle of horse racing in America would be a hero. Highly interesting, but again, it's not the easiest task for them to overcome, traveling to Saudi, Dubai, then Churchill. It's a long way, and you already used two races this year, and then traveling from Middle East is definitely a barrier to overcome. I mean, again, we haven't had a great track record on dirt in terms of the surface. Japanese horses, not their racing's fault, the dirt is. So, I mean, it's definitely, big challenge for the connection and Japanese racing. I mean, if he comes to the first three, it would be great, to be honest. And I mean, it's brilliant result. And then, the different fact is, he is carrying the best form before the Kentucky Derby to run there as a you know, Japanese contender.
We're seeing the slide up there on the screen now. Forever Young, a perfect 5 for 5. We're estimating that top buyer figure as a 100 for that run back in Saudi. Spoke with Randy Moss on our mini pod about Forever Young. He actually said their estimate's even a little higher than that, about a 101. Would have regressed some in the race in Dubai, but got to keep in mind, it was wide the whole time. It was probably an equivalent, if not slightly superior effort in my view. Alan, I want to bring you in, though, to get your thoughts generally on Forever Young. And again, with both you and Alex for this one, I really want an extra note about what you think in terms of Forever Young and his pedigree for this test, both in terms of distance and class.
I mean, I really think it's fascinating. Like, obviously, connections have wanted to run him on the dirt from day one, and he was just extremely impressive first time out. He sat behind the pace. He was not speed crazy. He settled kindly. He showed a rating gear, and he still had plenty of running to do, a few lengths to make up, turning for home, but he hit that gap so hard and kicked home. I looked it up just a few minutes ago. He finished on debut. He finished over those tracks, Kyoto. I forget. I think it was Kyoto. And he finished in 37.7 for the final 600. For a debuting two-year-old going 9 furlongs, to finish up that way is highly impressive in my mind. And he's just gone from strength to strength from there, from Mombetsu to the win and the Zenipan Nishayushin. Saudi, I mean, you know, what can you say about that? He did almost everything wrong a horse could do and still managed to run down a very, very good sprinter miler in the form of Bokum Dano. And, you know, Toshi and I stood probably near each other watching Forever Young a few weeks ago in Dubai. I mean, that was an impossible trip over a track that typically carries speed. You know, you've seen the likes of Crown Pride and Derma Sotogake win that race, but in much different fashion. I mean, I think Forever Young is a different brand of racehorse than anything Japan has sent over. And I was a giant fan of Derma Sotogake last year. I thought he ran well under suboptimal conditions. I in my opinion, Forever Young is Derma Sotogake plus.
Wow.
I mean, he's very, very hard to knock at this point. He's done a lot of traveling, Japan to Saudi to Dubai, and now over here to Chicago quarantine and then down to Kentucky. So I mean, he's got it all to do, but listen, he's accomplished everything they've asked of him. He's brilliantly bred for it on the bottom. And his sire was a winner in Dubai, full brother to Loves Only You. You know, congrats, a big female family on the bottom. Like, it's all there. Like, he ticks all the boxes.
That's some very high praise. Alex, fangirl that you are of these JRA runners shipping internationally, I'm going to take a wild guess that you like this horse. Very curious to hear your specific opinion on Forever Young. And, you know, Alan, we talk about Derma Sotogake, and he did have that suboptimal run in the Derby. You can't forget, he then really established his undeniable quality with that huge run later in the year under what had to be considered very tricky conditions without an ideal prep. So if you're looking at a horse that's better than that, or you're looking at a Kentucky Derby contender, kind of any way you slice it, how serious are you taking him? What sort of price are you looking for? I want your overview of Forever Young.
Yes. If the smile of it didn't give it away, I am so excited to see Forever Young run. I have a couple of key notes that I found from snooping around from different sources. I definitely want to credit my source, as I'm not sure if this is public yet, but I was able to find someone who was describing his Thoroughgraph numbers from 2 to 3. And as a two-year-old, according to Pass the Wire TV, as a two-year-old, he ran 11 and 8 and then got a 5 3/4 time for or Thoroughgraph rating, winning that grade one at Kawasaki to end his two-year-old season. And now as a three-year-old, Forever Young has paired ones. So that's a pretty great pattern. We've seen some great jumps, some nice consistency. And I definitely think he has the ability to improve off that paired one Thoroughgraph figure. Also want to note that in terms of pace and trip, I guess I can talk about his price first. I think a lot of us in the community believe he'll probably go off at as third choice, perhaps fourth choice, if Catching Freedom takes a little more money than him. I bring up Catching Freedom because there is a team at Bloodhorse that went ahead and adjusted his last three furlong stretch run time according to, you know, the different metric distance of the UAE Derby. And they had him coming home in 36.63 seconds. Again, that's roughly, it's adjusted for the metric distance. Catching Freedom's Louisiana Derby win that looked quite impressive had him coming home at 36.58 seconds. So only 1/20th of a second, 0.05 second difference than Catching Freedom, who's a horse that's on most people's short list, definitely almost everyone's top five list. So he's incredibly close to some of the top US talent here. In terms of his, in terms of the ride, I think he'll get the path I think he'll take in the Derby. I went back and I had to look back to 2012 and pull out I'll Have Another, one of my personal favorite Derby winners. And I think he'll get the I'll Have Another trip. I'll Have Another sat like seventh mid pack after breaking from the 19th post and then just motored home like a freight train to get that, get. Finally found enough to get there to Bodie Meister in the end to win. So, and you know what? I'll Have Another was sent to Japan to stand stud. He just got sent back to old friends a month ago. So, hey, maybe it's destiny. Maybe the stars will align.
I love it. I have to ask, there's been a narrative, and I've been one of the people advancing this narrative about fear for Forever Young and the kickback. And Toshi, in part, this comes from the interview that you conducted or helped conduct as translator after the UAE Derby, when it was described that that sort of unusual hood that he was wearing that didn't have a cup, it had nothing to do with focus and everything to do with trying to keep him out of the cutback, the kickback. Combining that with the way he was ridden, I do worry about him being maybe a complicated ride if connections are worried about kickback. Or do you think that might be overblown and it's the kind of thing where if he has to face the kickback, he can? How concerned are you, Toshi, as a fan, with Forever Young's ability to deal with kickback in a race like the Kentucky Derby?
It's a really good question. I mean, but he 100 okay in Japan, to be honest, when you look at the, you know, his first two starts in Japan. So I don't know, but the, you know, the surface and, you know, dirt is a little bit different in, you know, US or, you know, even Dubai or Saudi. So maybe, you know, he doesn't handle that. I'm not like concerning too much, but if the connection stick with that strategy going all the way, you know, five or six, you know, from the rail, I think that's, you know, he really needs to be different class of champion. And, you know, watching those other, you know, prep races for the Kentucky Derby, there's, you know, definitely a couple of huge, good horses. So I'm not sure he can beat those, you know, the leading contenders from, you know, the nation, you know, in the Kentucky Derby, the way he ran in the Saudi and Dubai.
And do you get the sense that the connections are worried about a kickback to this point? I don't know if you've spoken to anybody in the camp since the UAE Derby, but do you think that's a legitimate concern that might be in their heads?
I mean, yes, definitely they do. They do worry about that. And that's the way they, you know, the Ryusei Sakai, you know, riding for him in Dubai and Saudi. But, I mean, you know, experience and, you know, even Dubai, we watched in the morning truck work. He was always following the Rivian grass behind the Rivian grass to get kickback. I think, you know, experience, you know, that's improve him. And even Yahagi said at the interview, you know, he need to improve from here to win the Derby. And I think that's, you know, fair comment. And yeah, to win the Derby, I think he need to do, you know, in really bit different way. That's what I am thinking. I mean, and then, you know, my question would be how this, you know, the speed figure standing, you know, compared to previous years, if any of you can answer.
Well, yeah, I can. I mean, a one on Thoroughgraph, that's going to be basically as fast. I don't have it in front of me, but I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that would be as fast as anybody but Fierceness. I mean, if Fierceness runs his race, a one, even a improved, you know, even a zero which is, you know, like a 101 buyer when I did a conversion experiment years ago. So you're looking at, you know, basically, I think the same kind of number that a horse like Sierra Leone would run. You're not out of it running that kind of number. And one thing we should do on this video that we've talked about elsewhere, and Alan, I'll let you remind people about the human connections associated. We talked about the human connections with T.O. Password. What about Forever Young and his camp? What have they accomplished internationally?
Well, I know that Mr. Fujita has been an avid buyer. He's been an avid supporter of American breeze up sales. He's purchased a lot of expensive horses and taken them back to Japan. And I mean, to be fair, he's had only moderate success with purchases he's made here in the $700 to $1 million range. He does also campaign a horse called Shin Emperor, who raced in last weekend in the Satsuki show and ran very well. Just didn't see out the 2000, I thought. So Mr. Fujita, I think he's a motivated owner. I think he wants to do well and participate in these sorts of races. And you know, obviously Yahagi needs no introduction. He's a man that's had success. Anything he touches turns to gold, whether it's here, there, Saudi, Australia, Japan, Timbuktu, you name it.
We got a lot of new people around here, so I wanted to make sure we hit that note. YouTube brings in a very wide audience who might not know about his Breeders' Cup success, about his success internationally. So that was a note I wanted to hit. Last question, quick around the horn, because we're already over time. Alex, I'll start with you. Will this be the year Japan gets the Kentucky Derby winner?
God, I hope so. I'd be so excited. If you hear screaming from Royal Oak, Michigan, it's because Japan won.
I love it. Alan, what about you? Are you willing to go as hard and as bold as Alex and say this will be the year?
And, you know, like Alex says, I'm a Catching Freedom supporter as well, but I don't think that this horse has a whole lot to do to bridge that sort of gap. I mean, in terms of who we've brought over, and thinking Lonnie and Master Fencer and Crown Pride and Derma Sotogake, I think I feel pretty strongly that Forever Young is possessed of more talent than any of those. So I'm not going to commit to saying that he's going to be a winner, but I think he gives Japan its best shot to date.
Toshi, where do you stand at the end of the day? What are you expecting? Will this be the year for Japan under the Twin Spires?
Again, different. You know, I hope that's the case. But yeah, I think fast three would be fantastic results for Japan. And you know, again, you know, horse to beat would be, you know, of course Sierra Leone and you know a fierceness, as you said, Pete. You know, if he's on, he is unbeatable, I'd say.
Will you be here, Toshi? Will you be resuming your translator duties? Will we see you out there?
Not confirmed yet, but you know, fingers crossed.
We hope to see you. Hope to see all of you. We'll also see you all in the JRA coverage on the In the Money Media Network that you can find over at inthemoneypodcast.com. We don't have JRA racing this weekend, but it's coming back next weekend with fury, and we'll have coverage on the Players Podcast and especially over at inthemoneypodcast.com. This incredibly sharp team will be a part of it, as will our friend Klaus Eppner, who will probably be back on the show as soon as next week to give his thoughts on all these matters. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I want to thank all of today's varied guests, those on camera, those on microphone. Really, as podcasters, we're only as good as our guests, and we're lucky that we have the best ones in the business. I think this slight hodgepodge of a show is evidence of that. We've got some thank yous. Start with our founding partners, 10 Strike Racing. It was great to have Clay Sanders giving out winners on the Keeneland Pod last Sunday. We'll have more Keeneland Pods this week, but, you know, around here, we always love to root for Clay and Marshall and all those horses wearing the purple and the black. Let's shout out our charity partners, Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. This is where Kim Weir is working these days, continuing that mission that's so near and dear to her heart, helping humans and helping horses. Can't wait to learn more about them. If you want to get a jump on learning more about them, or even better yet, give generously to their cause. Hey, maybe you had that, $50 horse we gave out on Sunday. You want to say thank you? We don't take tips. Donate to Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. inthemoneypodcast.com/horses, the place you go to check that out. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you, our listeners, our viewers, our free newsletter subscribers, our plus people. We're nothing without you. And even if you just listen to the shows, that's fantastic support. We'll take it. If you want to do more, there's those other obvious areas as well. Go ahead and go to our YouTube channel and subscribe. That's one thing you can do to really help us out. That's a big initiative for us this time of year. But the main thing you do for us is make these shows so much fun to do. That's just going to keep continuing for as long as we do them. That's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatale. May you win all your photos.